RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We are at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com.
Hi, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. With me, as usual, is Brian.
Yo.
And Mike.
Howdy.
All right. Today, I'm going to interview one of you guys, and I'm going to force you to prep an adventure. I'm going to show you how easy it is. Who is my unlucky volunteer?
Not it.
It's me. Okay.
All right, Brian. So, we're just starting off. We're jumping right in. We're prepping an adventure together. You have no real forethought, right?
I mean, I have a little. I would be lying if I said I didn't.
Okay. But we're going into this, for the most part, cold. I don't think you have... You don't have villains picked out. You have no idea what the villains are up to. You have no idea how you're going to reward your players. You have no idea any of that. You know is what we've talked about in the podcast before. You want to run a game.
Yes.
Okay. What experience do you want your players to have?
Like, as characters or as the actual player?
You know what? Let's do both. What experience do you want your players to have?
I mean, so... this is going to be for my game that I finally run, and I don't want to have somebody who's never, ever played an RPG, but at the same time, I don't really want an expert, somebody who is going to like try to rule general me all the way through. So someone who has some exposure, even if the exposure is just like from watching stuff on YouTube or listening to a podcast, but I don't want somebody who's like a complete like neophyte or something like that.
Okay, so that's who you want to play with. You want to play with someone who has, at minimum, some exposure. At maximum, someone who has played maybe even a lot, but who you feel confident will not take over the game.
Yeah.
Okay. What experience do you want that person to have? And when I say experience, that person shows up to a common space, logs into a website, they sit down at a table with everyone, or no, snacks... what's the physical experience for the player?
So we're all going to be in the same room. It'll be just a few people, I think. Three, maybe four, but right now I'm thinking three. I think snacks are important. In fact, I want to have things at the table that pretty well laid out. When I say laid out, I don't mean just like coordinate-wise on the table, but... I want to have the table set up so that they don't really need to get up except for like a bio break. Snacks are definitely a plus. And I want it to be fairly well lit. I want it to be, I want people to be engaged, but I don't, again, want to, force engagement on people. Like when you have to coerce somebody into coming along, I think you're probably failing your job as a GM or a meeting host or whatever.
Okay. That's the physical experience. How about the game experience for the player? Not the character, the player. Do you want them to roll their own character, or do you want to hand them a character? Or do you want them to let them some middle ground? They choose from a menu of characters.
I mean, So we're going to be playing Pocket Fantasy RPG, and you actually built up a really nice, I guess it was a JavaScript tool.
Pocket Fantasy is a system, and you're going to leverage this site. So and this site, what Brian's referring to, character creation in Pocket Fantasy RPG is literally limited to two choices: race, class, and that's it.
Yeah, it's really simple. I was marveling, actually, looking at reading the guide, just how simple it is, which is one of the reasons that I wanted to go with that. Yeah, I mean, I would pretty much let's see here. There are, 24 possible?
Actually, not all of them are possible. So, for example, if you click on the ranger, mm-hmm. you'll see that only humans and elves can be rangers.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would basically just have every version printed out. I mean, I'm literally using about 20 sheets of paper. It's not that much.
Really? So, the intent for this, and I shouldn't challenge you on your experience, but since we're talking about the tool that I made, the intent for that tool was to be used on a phone. That way someone could extemporaneously decide what to be.
Yeah, I totally, totally get that. And I think that's absolutely great. But for my comfort level, for my first game, I want to make it as clean and simple as possible.
Well, good news for you, and I'm advertising this tool a little bit, even though it's completely free, just like this game system. If you go to print, there's a separate print style sheet, and you'll see that none of the questions, like the, you know, what race do you want to be, none of that prints up. It's just the race, the class,
equipment. Yeah, I mean, so like for like my second game, or if we're sitting at the table, yeah, I mean, I would just have everybody use their phone. But for my first game with the people that I have in mind, I would rather give them a sheet of paper. And also, you know, paper is part of the experience for some people, and especially people who don't necessarily have that much experience with the system or our tabletop RPGs in general. I mean, I would want them to be as comfortable as possible, or as in a familiar situation as possible. And I think paper probably gives people comfort because that's what they know. You know, it's part and parcel with tabletop RPGs.
Okay. Now, the players have arrived. They're sitting on the table. There's snacks in front of them. Everything's laid out nicely. There's plenty of room. Everyone's chosen their paper character sheet. You go to play. What experience do you want the players' characters to have?
One of the things that you've done in the past is you've talked about how you should steal. Stealing is good. So, in my mind, the characters that... the game that I was sort of want to run is based on a movie. And the characters in the movie are... they're hardened. They're not... A couple of them, are gritty. But they're definitely... None of them are beginners. So, I think the characters in my mind sort of range from intermediate to advanced, kind of like warriors.
Okay. But I guess what I'm saying is... Just at a high level, in one sentence, what are they overcoming? A villain? Are they solving a mystery? You know what? How about this? Let's start even higher level than that. Is this a campaign or is this a one shot?
One shot. There is a what we would call a crime. Crimes being committed, and they need to get to the bottom of the crime. And they think that it's tied to a theft that happens I'll just tell you that the characters are siblings. They think that it happened. They think the crimes are related to a theft of their property from years back.
And you said, okay, we're going to flesh this out a little bit. You said that you have, you're just like I do, you're stealing from... something else. You're stealing from a movie, a book, yeah. A game. What's your inspiration?
So two different things. So to avoid, like, whenever I come up with a movie or something, typically it's rarely ever team-based. And the plot of the movie that I wanted to borrow from isn't team-based. It's about a single protagonist. So I'm basically mixing things up and taking two of my favorite movies and making them into one. I'm taking the characters from one and putting them into the plot of the other. So it's the Earps and Doc Holliday from Tombstone, and I'm putting them in basically into the general plot of Spider-Man Homecoming, where the alien tech was stolen by the Vulture, Adrian Toomes and his crew, and they're committing crimes with it. And at the end, they basically have to, you know, Spider-Man gets the tech back.
Spoiler warning.
It came out last year. I didn't say whether or not he got the tech back.
Well, I still haven't seen Homecoming. That's more than I had known about it.
Well, I spoiled the first 3 minutes of the movie. Congratulations.
All right. Cool. Let's talk about the villains then. Let's pivot. And I always say, when I talk about my prep, I prep the villains and the villains' plans. And then from there, it's easy for me to play extemporaneously. So who are the villains? I hear you that you have the Vulture from Spider-Man Homecoming. Obviously, you're going to rename, reskin him, use his same voice, use his same personality, but, you know, choose a different look, feel, whatever, so that the players don't recognize him. Do you have any of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, general idea. So So the races that we have, as far as player characters go, I don't have the guide in front of me. I'm trying to remember if either goblins or like orcs or something like that. Some sort of semi-sapient species, if they're represented in Pocket Fantasy RPG.
So let's just take a moment and find out and show people how easy Pocket Fantasy is to deal with. So, Brian, if you will navigate to Google Plus.
I'm there right now.
And you can, there's a Pocket Fantasy RPG community. Now, we discovered that there's another Pocket Fantasy RPG that's a phone game. And
this is not that.
This is not that. This is different. This, you'll recognize some black and white simple line art of a fighter and a thief. But if you're on the community, there's a if you expand the About Community section, there's a Downloads section that links off to a Google Drive.
Yeah. I actually used to have this on my desktop until I reinstalled Windows a month back. So
you can download the rules version 3.2, and you will find all of the monsters on the third page.
Let's look that up.
Sorry, the fourth page.
My bad. That makes more sense, doesn't it? Goblin right there. So, I mean, there's quite a few things. So I can mix and match. I can have a cult leader, a couple of goblins. I've got room to play around with. So basically, without spoiling too much of the movie, I mean, the tech that does different things, the alien tech. So I could sort of align, like, what my ideal mix of challenges would be against the type of villain in here.
Well, let's start with the big bad. I mean, let's just do this. Choose a monster from this list to be the big bad. Take special note of the hit points.
Yeah. Man, there's so many great options here. I would probably...
And remember, now here's a key thing I was going to point out. We're going to use the hit points. We're going to use the CS, the damage. But we're not going to worry about the name because we can always rename this to whatever. We're just using the math and the mechanics.
Probably I would go with the vampire because of the abilities that they have. They are susceptible to, like a vampire, to garlic, sunlight, rushing water, and wooden stakes. I don't think that's going to come into play. But otherwise, I mean, I think those abilities, energy drain, they're fast, they have flight, they're strong. So I think that works well. 20 hit points and, melee, I can live with melee. I think that works.
D6 is fairly hefty damage.
Yeah, against a crew of four people, I don't think it's that bad. And most of the enemies appear to be. Some of them are like D6 minus 3 or D6 minus 2. Some of them are, gosh, this one is what, D6 2 D6? Is that right? Wow, a chimera.
That's D6 times 2. You roll 1 D6 and you double it.
Yeah, that's pretty substantial.
So from a one-shot perspective, would
oh, I'm
you...
sorry. The X2 actually denotes that the monster makes two attacks, so yes, it's 2d6. Ah. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
No, you're fine. So from a one-shot perspective, would you be leveling up your players before this? Would you be entering
them? I mean, I would have to balance the best I could.
Yeah.
With what experience I have and what insight I can glean from Dusty.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't plan to level up. And also, leveling up is not a huge part of this game.
So I was wondering for his players to actually be able to encounter a vampire and not be wiped. How does Pocket Fantasy handle that? Can you do a group of level 1 party members and have them successfully or even have a chance of success of defeating a vampire?
So Pocket Fantasy, the actual downline, has all these items that you can hand out. Mm-hmm. The way you're going to want to level folks up is to give them lots of items. You know, make sure they have healing potions. Give them some +1 armor. Give them some +1 weapons.
Gotcha. So some of the tech they could recover along the way to encountering the vampire could give them that advantage against the big bad.
Yeah, there you go. All right. What's the name of the vampire? What are you gonna name this thing?
Michael Keaton.
You're not going to call it a vampire.
Yeah. I would call it... It would be a play, of course, on being some sort of... bird. So I'm not going to say vulture. I can't say Falcon. So it'd be something like, I'd probably just Google some bird names and pick one that sounds ominous.
Why not Raven?
I think you
That's a good one.
That's a good one. I mean, something like that.
All right, I'll put Raven for now. I'm gonna.
That's
note,
so Raven.
I'm gonna note that you're using a vampire stats, even though you won't call it that, and that's fine. All right, so we have the name and the mechanics, and for the personality, you're gonna leverage Vulture's personality.
Yeah, in the movie, which is distinct from the Vulture from the comic.
Okay, so do you feel like his voice from the movie is unique enough that if I put you on the spot right now and said, okay, he's just taken a hit, he's taken his first big hit from the PCs, he's dealt some damage, that's the situation, roleplay me, what's his line? What does he say after taking this big hit?
I mean, the interesting thing is, since I'm drawing from this, I've got to think back to what he was like prior to the end of the movie. Typically, and again, it depends on where he is in the movie, so it'd have to be where it is in the game. But I mean, it wouldn't be anything elaborate. It would be like, you'll pay for that, or, do that again, and, you know, I'll kill everybody in your family. I'll kill everybody you love. I mean, it would be something in that general vein.
Okay. Well, I'm putting you on the spot. We're going to do funny voices, man. Give me that line in his voice.
Man, so I want to preface by saying this is hard because I'm not really in the moment. This is not really the battle. This is just a generic setup. So I put myself in the mood. So, okay. So the battle's happening. The Wyatt Earp character gets in a good strong shot a ranged attack on the Raven. The Raven would probably look at him and say something like, I'll spare your life I'll spare your life first and save you for last after I've, you know, killed your brothers, and I'll let you I'll The last thing you'll hear is after their death. God, this sucks. The last thing you'll hear after their moaning is the cracking of your own skull. Something like that.
Well, there you go.
Nice.
So, not bad for being put on the spot. Not bad at all. Couple things I'll point out is that the mood is constantly being broken at the table. You've got to lead the players, especially new players. Like at the beginning, you said you want players with some exposure, not a lot, and who aren't going to call you out. So you're looking to be more experienced than your players, which is a choice, and it's a good choice. It's not the only choice, but that's fine. That means that you're leading the way. It means that they're going to feel weird about doing voices. It means that they're going to break the tension with a joke. It means they're going to suddenly crunch loudly on a Dorito in the middle of your cool. So you've got to be the one to lead the way to getting into character. And honestly, Brian, there's a million ways to do this. You don't actually have to use the character's voice. You could choose to use a third-person voice and simply describe it.
How I would normally do that, I think.
Yeah. So take a crack at that. So third-person. So,
okay,
you know, Ranger, excellent shot. You've hit the Raven. He turns towards you.
The Raven looks down at the opening in his armor. And he makes a cold, dead stare straight down, you know, through the middle of you. And he says that he will save you for last. And after you listen to the moaning of your brothers, you'll hear the cracking of your own skull as things go black and you hear your own death rattle. Something like that.
That was great. Mike?
I agree. That was great.
All
that
right.
That's a very effective line and would pull me as a character closer into the combat because you've raised the stakes and you've made it personal for my character. So yeah.
Tell me about the Raven's henchmen.
So, they're gonna have. Let me actually go back to the guide to see what my options are. I wanted to fit in something like a ghoul or a goblin.
Why a ghoul or a goblin? Those are two very different monsters.
Well, honestly, the ghosts aren't an option. And I always go back to Batman when Billy Dee Williams says, "Ghosts and goblins." So I'm always partial.
You love that line.
I'm partial to that.
World was robbed from an excellent performance when Billy Dee Williams never got to actually complete the Harvey Dent story and become Two-Face.
Yep. So actually looking over the list, I guess I want the big bad to be definitely more powerful and imposing than his henchmen, but I also don't necessarily want them to be pushovers. So,
remember, this is a lethal system, and remember that this is their first game, and you've already vampire 20 hit points. He's dropping a D6 damage, which is on the upper end of the spectrum, not the highest, but it is on the upper end of the spectrum for the bosses.
That's fair.
The only bosses I see that are higher right off, there's a lot that also do a D6. The only ones I see that are higher are the Dragon and the Chimera, and that's it.
Okay, so that's very fair. So a ghoul has 5 hit points, and they do D6 minus 2 damage. I think 5 hit points is definitely going to be easy to overcome, but that D6 minus 2 is certainly no slouch when it comes to damage. But it is, I guess, next to least effective when it comes to damage.
They also do paralysis. So if you have a bunch of ghouls and they paralyze a couple, even just one PC on the first turn, suddenly the 4 ghouls against the 4 PCs becomes 4 ghouls against 3.
Right.
And then someone else gets paralyzed. It gets hard. The math is hard. And I want to point that out, and that's fine. There are ways we can deal with that, Brian.
So, yes, let me insert one thing. So even though we've described the challenge that we've had personally with CR, CR is still like a starting point. I don't see CR in this at all. So how many? But in my mind, these are going to be individual encounters. But I mean, how often in an RPG is there just an individual encounter? So what's? I guess I could throw kobolds at them. Could be like minions for the henchmen.
So let's use a human cleric as the average. So looking at human cleric, we'll just look at a cleric. Cleric has 8 hit points, and they deal a D6 minus 1 damage. In general, all the CR math, it basically comes down to if you have about the same number of hit points and about the same amount of damage on the monster side, you can manage that combat and ramp it up to hard or make it easy just by different monster choices.
Okay.
So, in general, if you have 4, for starting out with a new system, you've got 4 good guys, and the 4 good guys are going to have an average of 8 hit points each. That's about 40 hit points total on the good guy side. The good guys will be doing, a D6 minus 1, that comes out to an average of 2.5,
mm-hmm.
right? Because a D6 is 3.5 minus 1, so... So an average of 2.5 damage each round. So your 4 PCs are going to be dealing an average of 2.5 times 4. Brian, you're always faster at arithmetic than me. 10 damage per round. So you got 40 hit points total. You got 10 hit points per round. When I look at that vampire, it's got 20 hit points total. But it's dealing a D6 hit point per round, but it's after these characters have been softened up on some other monsters. So I still feel good about that vampire. I think that's going to be still a hard fight. For the bad guys, let's see. What can we drop on the players that has 40 hit points and does about 10 hit points of damage? And it's going to be a number of things, right? So you like the ghouls, even though paralysis is going to be a force multiplier here.
Yeah, I mean, I can change that. Or I could, just have one of them. In my mind, I want to have... I'm looking at the kobolds. I think the kobold... Like, if I just want to start throwing numbers of enemies, kobolds seem to be the... And giant rats are both pretty...
You know what? I like your instincts, because... You're probably not going to have time to throw tons and tons and tons of bad guys at them. Let's go with the ghouls. I think 5 hit points. Let's maybe do 4 ghouls.
Okay.
And then the ghouls can get reinforced by some kobolds if the ghoul fight goes too easy.
Yeah.
All right, so 4 ghouls and 4 kobolds. The 4 ghouls, that's 20 hit points. The 4 kobolds will be 4 more hit points, but the kobolds do d6 minus 3 damage. So the 4 ghouls, I know this math is boring, sorry. 1.5 times 4 is 6. And then the kobolds deal d6 minus 3, so 0.5 damage times 4 is 2. Yeah, 8. So it's an easier encounter. 8 damage, 30 hit points. This seems reasonable. Let's start there.
So how many encounters should I have?
I think 2.
2. So I think for the story, I would want to have 3. So what if I have that and did it in 2 encounters?
Sure. Oh, well, what if you just go ahead and do 3? Do you want your first encounter to be a pushover or no?
Yes.
Okay. So let's definitely do ghouls and kobolds for the second encounter. What's that first encounter pushover going to be?
I mean, honestly,
just kobolds? That way you're not dealing with a bunch of different monsters or something else?
I want it to be one. I think one enemy.
Ooh.
I just one. Semi-imposing, you think it's going to be a more challenging fight than it is. Potentially build up that, you know, sense of confidence. Then the next encounter, we sort of take you down a peg by throwing more at you because they don't know how many hit points. Because I'm not going to do, which I love, but your whiteboarding where you show how many hit points are left, I'm not going to reveal that. So I want to give them sort of a sense of peril by, you know, if there's like 4 or 5 enemies on the board, or however we do it, I want the 4 or 5 enemies. I want them to sweat a little bit.
I like that ogre. Check him out. His for a first combat, he doesn't have abilities that are tough to manage.
No,
his abilities are hulking, which means 2 extra damage to attack totals, and large, which means just that he's large. There's no actual mechanical thing.
And he can cause some damage, but they should be able to take him out in, like, 2 rounds.
Yep.
Yeah, that works.
He's easy to manage. All right, so an ogre. All right, now let's go back and layer some story on top of these bad guys. What is... You're not going to call the ogre, probably. What is he in your world?
I'm not... So, they're magical items. What... So... He would be strong and hulking, so he would probably have some sort of enchantment that they would recognize from an amulet, or I guess an amulet, we'll say, because that's nice and easy.
He could be the Paul Giamatti rhino from the...
Yeah, he could be. gosh, I completely forgot that movie existed. Yeah, I mean, he could be something like that, and... He would be powered by, I guess, an amulet that would have been stolen from... I want them to realize, yes, after this combat, it is definitely the loot or whatever that was stolen from their family. So, yeah, he would just be strong. It would imbue him with power, with strength. But we'd have to come up with a way for it.
Let's just go blatant. Is there a specific character from either movie, Tombstone or Spider-Man Homecoming, that you'd base him on? Remember, what I'm looking for here, Brian, is a voice that you can easily slip into.
Fair enough. So in the Spider-Man Homecoming, there most of the villains are enemies are pretty generic. So he would probably be Curly Bill from Tombstone.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Leading off with Curly Bill.
Yeah, Curly... Like,
hulking, exploding...
Curly Bill. I mean, so he would be, like, he would be brash, he would be confident, he would be, I guess, wizened by years of being a bandit, but he is not, he's the leader in Tombstone. He is the leader of the cowboys to begin with, but that it doesn't matter in this. I think the character probably makes the most sense, especially
think
because
about that scene when he's all opiated you know, laudlumed.
Well, he's smoking opium.
Yeah, he's when he's in the opium den, and he comes out, and he's shooting at the moon.
Yeah.
And he's going crazy and yelling. That's him drunk with power on the amulet.
Yes, I love it.
And then the sheriff tries to stop him, and it looks like he's going to take the amulet off, and then all of a sudden he rips the sheriff apart.
Yes, yes, love it.
You can completely steal that scene.
Totally.
Okay.
Spoilers for Tombstone.
Spoilers for Tombstone.
It only came out 25 years ago.
So, Curly Bill, awesome. Feel great about that. The goblins and the kobolds, who are they?
So I'm thinking they're probably just going to be more, I hate to say generic.
I said goblins. I meant, ghouls, the ghouls and the kobolds.
So I guess I'm gonna have to draw from a couple different things. I'm thinking they could be the Clantons. If maybe like the most powerful one could be like Johnny Ringo. Then like the one just a tier below could be like Ike Clanton.
So is the fight with the ghouls and the kobolds, maybe there's an easier way to fast track this. Instead of having to come up with a character for every one of these eight monsters, we could just say, hey, this is the gunfight at the OK Corral.
Yeah. General thought, different, but you know, different people involved. Actually, I guess the Clantons were there. Johnny Ringo wasn't.
It's all right. You can add Johnny Ringo to the OK Corral. Yeah. But now you have Ike Clanton's voice. You have, I forget the actor's name, but he played Lowell. An airplane.
Wings.
Wings. He played Lowell in Wings. Thank you very much.
It's he was a big star for like a month when he made that movie. Then he played Sandman.
He did play Sandman. Wow, the Spider-Man connections keep on coming.
It's the crossover episode.
So we have some voices you can draw from there because you're very familiar with those scenes.
Yeah. I mean, so he's not like a character with a real voice. I mean, he's kind of generic, honestly. All right.
Let's connect these scenes. So I think we have a beautiful opening scene with Curly Bill, the ogre, causing a disturbance. The players come out to see what's going on. The sheriff tries to disarm him. He rips the sheriff apart, and then boom, combat begins.
Yeah, and they make the realization, yes, this is they're correct. Their family treasure, family gems, whatever, were stolen, so they want to make their way to the den of...
I'm feeling iffy on that, Brian.
Okay.
Let me tell you why. So, I think we have a clear scene to start with, and a clear reason to get into combat, which is the hardest thing. How do players get engaged and get in combat? Okay, here's how. This guy's going nuts. No one can stop him. He's just killed the sheriff, or you know, we'll call it the captain of the town guard. What do you do? I think that hinting that it's these artifacts that give him this power is easy because there's the moment when he's about to take the amulet off and then he doesn't. That's clue one. Clue two is when he finally falls, you could have the amulet fall off of him and all of a sudden his musculature changes.
Yeah.
So you can definitely clue people in as far as the artifact nature, the fact that his powers are imbued on him by this magical item. Why layer in you've got these players, they're just trying to inhabit these characters. Why have a secret history that you know about and they don't to the characters that they're playing? I think you're going to take away some of their agency.
So, I mean, but that's part of the premise though, right? Like the things that they know, they would know that they're siblings. They would know that their family fortune was stolen from them, you know, a couple of years ago, and they're basically effectively destitute or whatever. I'm just, you know, freestyling, and they are they're in this town, which like in Tombstone, you know, they come to this town, but instead to find fame and fortune, they're there to get to the bottom of, you know, what happened to their you know, their family, they want to regain their stature, their status. I mean, they would know about that. I mean,
what do you think, Mike?
I was just going to say, why not give them the same background as the Earp brothers, right? So, rough and tumble lawmen who are ready to turn over a new leaf coming into a new town, put their past behind them and start their, you know, new life as a prospector, but they fall into a scenario where the existing, you know, leadership of the town isn't willing or is unable to stand up to the villains, so they have to take it upon themselves as, you know, men who are dedicated to justice.
I mean, that would make it easier. I mean, if I'm literally just aping the entire plot, which I think is honestly probably the point, I mean, that would make it easier.
Well, no, I don't want you to totally ape. I want you to draw enough inspiration. The point is the setup, yeah, you're aping that, but what are your players going to do? Yeah. Brian, you're underestimating how much chaos your players are going to unleash on this scenario. And you want to give them this isn't really an opportunity for you to be terribly creative. You're enabling their creativity.
Okay. I mean that makes sense. I do feel like I guess I may be trying to railroad.
It's your game. I'm only challenging you. I'm only challenging you because I think that burdening their characters with backstory that's from you would stop them from feeling as free to act. I think you're going to set them up to keep asking you questions like, well, what else is missing?
This?
Well,
yes.
What would I do? Versus, hey, instead of ex-lawmen, Mike, maybe they're ex-soldiers. Hey, this war has just ended. You guys were a squad of soldiers. You've traveled together. You know each other. You know that you are good as hell in a fight. Oh, shit, this thing's happening with the Captain of the Town Guard. And all of a sudden, they're swept up in this adventure. They know there's this gang of people that have these magical artifacts. They find that out from the townspeople. Do they wait and go for the gunfight at the OK Corral? Or do they try to... How do they handle that gunfight? They don't necessarily walk around the corner like the Earps. Maybe they snipe. Maybe they throw in some firebombs. Maybe they let the Clantons disperse and they go after them in their hideout. Who knows? Your players are going to throw so much chaos at you.
So with that said, is it even... So at what point do you assign a player character some backstory or task them to come up with it for themselves, right? So if it's someone new to a game, how much do you assume on behalf of the player?
Great question, Dusty. What are your thoughts?
My thought is someone's first game, make it easy.
Yeah.
Just make it easy. We've all watched that movie where, you know, an ex-Marine shows up and doesn't like the way things are going and, you know, uses their skills to wreak holy hell on the enemies and, you know, yada, yada, yada. We've all seen these cliche movies. Give your players a chance to live or experience one of those cliched B action movies.
Okay.
The easier the character is to inhabit, the more they'll feel free to act. And then if you turn it into a campaign, then you start asking them for backstories. Remember when DM Scotty ran us? He only asked us one question.
Yeah.
What's your goal? You want fame, money, or just to survive? And that was it. And we were unhindered by all this backstory. All right, let's tie the scenes together. So we've already talked about the ogre scene with the Curly Bill killing the sheriff. You get word to the player characters about a group of these gang members, you know, being generally rowdy and maybe firing, what's the word I'm looking for, recklessly around. Maybe an innocent NPC is taking a hit or, you know, been shot in the leg or something by a stray bullet. Well, no bullets, crossbow bolt, you know, casual violence, whatever. So you figure out a way to get them to the scene with the OK Corral. And then either Raven, the leader, comes to them or they go to him, but he's the last step in the adventure. So we have three basic scenes, and I think we have enough of a skeleton that you could on the fly get them from scene to scene. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it right now. I mean, again, it comes down to what the actual game, how it actually plays out at the table. Yeah, I think I could manage that.
Yeah, you gotta leave yourself room for them to do crazy stuff. With just those three outline points, you could make a whole lot of things fit. Let's do a couple of scenarios right now. And I know we're running a little bit long, but I think that's okay. I think this is an important episode. So they find out, they have the ogre scene, they kill the ogre. Let's say they don't want to get involved. You know what? I don't see any reason to get involved in that and what's going on over there at the stables. Because it's not the OK Corral, it's the stables now. I don't see any reason to go on. Well, okay, then you start throwing NPCs at them. Hey, you know what? A young woman walks past you and you know, she's been beaten up a little bit. A young man walks past you and he's bandaged. His face is bandaged. They've given him a pretty nasty scar. after they gave him a mean look. They just bully the town, and you remind those players they're playing heroes. If you don't want, if violence is a trigger for people, you robbery, property, whatever.
We gotta have some law.
Yeah, you just, it's like that scene where Sam Elliott's walking down the street in Tombstone, and he sees all the people are afraid. He sees the woman with the scar, and he decides he just can't keep dealing with this. He's going to become a sheriff by
now. It's like where Bruce Wayne is flipping through the channels and Dark Knight Returns and all the crime and all the misery. And yeah.
So you find some way to motivate them to OK Corral, even if they don't want to go.
And even if they don't, I can bring the OK Corral to them.
Absolutely. Same thing with the Raven. After the OK Corral, Raven's going to come gunning for him. If he doesn't, they can go after him. But either way, you can get to that scene, right?
Yeah.
Brian, I think we have your adventure pretty well laid out.
Yeah, I think we do.
There's one thing it's missing, and that's the denouement. I've said before that we're all narcissists at heart, I guess, and maybe me more some than others, but I used to love video games with single-player campaigns that made me feel like a big damn hero.
You saved President Ronnie.
You saved President Ronnie and Bad Dudes. MechWarrior 4, you've got scene after scene of these NPCs telling you how awesome you are. You know, gosh, thank you for coming back to this planet. Thank you for freeing us. You're a badass. It just makes you feel good. I've replayed mediocre games over and over again because the game makes you feel good. How are you going to make your players feel good after they finish this adventure? What are you going to reward them with?
Great question. I love that, actually. So I think we subtracted out the background of the theft of their family jewels. So, I mean, again, basically, I guess stealing from Tombstone. I mean, the cowboys in Tombstone have become basically, it's effectively martial law when you have vigilantes and criminals running things, people are oppressed. So once Raven is no more, the power of this band of I haven't even come up with a name for them yet, but their power is dissolved, and the people are incredibly thankful, and they want to basically make you, they want you to take some sort of formal authority. I mean, they might even want to make you king. So I think back to like the end of Army of Darkness, you know, and Bruce Campbell says, you know, they even wanted to make me king. And, you know, he declines. I mean, something like that. I mean, I would give them the chance to like, if they wanted to become like an oligarchy or something, I don't know, the option to do that, they can choose to decline it, just something like that, where the people are so thankful they want them to be like their the new leaders of the world or something.
I love the last scene in Tombstone when he's on that barge, and that guy wants to. Does he want to take a picture with him?
On a barge
with white, sorry, in the end of Tombstone, they're on that barge together, and some guy, Ike Clanton's descendant, is talking to him.
No, is this Wyatt Earp?
Maybe I'm thinking of Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, I've never actually watched Wyatt Earp.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Well, shoot. Oh well, maybe I'm mixing up my movies. Anyway,
I mean, the last scene in Tombstone is, I mean, it's the. Tom Mix wept. It's the narration of the...
That's right. Can you do some narration like that? Just to say, hey, you know what? So a couple things. Number one, I'd put it on them. I'd say, you're heroes in the town. Narrate for me what your characters would do next. And get them just to tell you. Kind of like the last scene in Animal House when it freeze frames on each character. Put it up to the players. And then jot down some notes as they're talking about that. And then tie that into some closing Robert Mitchum narration where give them this moment where, hey, you know what? Years later, you're old, you've settled down, and people are coming to interview you, and you suddenly have this moment where you realize that you've become a legend. And this story of what you did in this town, which you got to name the town, by the way, is you suddenly realize that story's going to live on forever.
Sorry, now I'm thinking of the end of I Am Legend when he realized that he was Legend.
But I really think you push the players for, okay, what would your characters do next? And like I said, jot down some notes and make use of it in that closing narration.
So can I, real quick, because I have to, just because we've talked so much about it, I'm just gonna do it. The power of the cowboy gang was broken forever. Ike Clanton was shot and killed 2 years later during an attempted robbery. Maddie died of a drug overdose shortly after she left Tombstone. Virgil and Allie Earp moved to California, where Virgil, despite the use of only one arm, became a town sheriff. Wyatt and Josephine embarked on a series of adventures, up or down, thin or flush, and in years they never left each other's side. Wyatt Earp died in Los Angeles. Among the pallbearers at his funeral were early Western movie stars William S. Hart and Tom Mix. Tom Mix wept. Sorry, I just had to get that out.
Did you look that up, or do you have that committed to memory?
I have the first line, first couple lines, the last couple lines committed to memory, but like most of it is just not there.
So I think that's your closing narration.
Yep.
You riff on that based on what they come up with for their characters.
I love it. I just take notes as they talk, and I come up with something cool.
All right. How do you feel about your ability to run this adventure now?
I think
the only prep you still need to do is go back through the monsters, and I think you need an index card per monster type.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you need to write down the abilities, because you notice on page 4 here, right, where ghoul, you know, fast. If you look over to the right, fast. This monster may reroll initiative and take the best result. You see that those powers actually mean something.
Yeah, it's not just pretty words.
Yep. So I think you would just need to prep index cards with each monster, and you'd actually want to write out the abilities, or heck, you know, take this PDF and copy and paste onto an index card size and cut it out. But just having some monster cards, I think you need some names. You find yourself a good long list of random names so that if they want to interact with the shopkeep or the innkeeper
or
the tavern master, you can act as if you always, oh yeah, sure, the tavern master's name is Jarl. And you circle it, you jot down tavern master next to the name Jarl that you'd already printed, and it seems to the players as if his name was always Jarl.
I love it.
I think you have some really basic prep to do, but for those of you listening at home, what we just did, Brian used two movies. They were his signposts for what he wanted to do, plot-wise, for his purpose, for his theme, for his tone. Professional storytellers put these stories together, so he's going to inherit a lot of really good bones of a story and a lot of really good bones of good drama from professionals. So he's got those great bones to work with, even with the players, you know, causing chaos in it. And he's going to be able to slip into character. He's got lines he can use. He's got themes he can use. He's got a lot he can use from these movies that he happens to be incredibly familiar with. This process here is exactly what we're talking about on the show when we say steal. Because you're not stealing the adventure whole cloth. You're stealing bits and pieces that you love, that you're familiar with, that you can recreate on the fly. Brian?
My next game I'll steal from Transformers the movie.
There you go. I know nothing about that, so I can't have that. It'll be a different conversation. We should record that one sometime down the road.
Yeah, that's like one of two movies that I know word for word.
All right. I think I feel good about your ability to run this. I keep talking over you. How do you feel? You feel like you can run this?
Yeah, I think I can run it. I want to go back and watch the movies a couple other times. A couple more times. You guys want to come over and watch Spider-Man Homecoming or Tombstone?
I will absolutely watch Tombstone. In fact, I will close the show out on this thought. Well, Mike, let me give you a chance to talk first, and then I'll have to share this closing thought of mine.
I would love to watch Tombstone with you again.
Mike, you've been quiet. I know we've talked around you and not brought you in. Anything you'd add to all this that you've heard?
I think probably the one thing we didn't address right is kind of what we talked about at the beginning is making sure your players are up to snuff to fight these bosses you've put in there. I think that's one other thing you might have to think of is how do you give them a shot? How do you make sure they don't get party wiped on this one shot? And even if they do, that's, you know, maybe not a terrible thing, but maybe not a great experience. But I think otherwise, yeah, you've got the good bones to a story. It sounds like you've got your characters and you've got your encounters. So really the only thing left is flavor. And then, you know, thinking of some of the agency for your players.
Damn, Mike, you're right. We didn't do that, did we?
Yeah, it's all good.
I think an easy way to do that, Brian, would be that they capture the amulets and rings of the monsters they fight.
And yeah. They take on those monsters' abilities.
Well, I was wanting to avoid that, so it'd have to. Because I don't necessarily want to give them a bill. Well, maybe I do want to give them the abilities.
I think you need to if you want them to survive that fight with that vampire.
Yeah, I guess I need to come up with the mechanics for that.
No, you don't. They're right there on page 4 under monster abilities.
Yeah, just give them the monster's abilities. So you'd have one player who could Hulk, but then you would need to come up with some additional items to give your players that additional edge.
Yeah, that amulet that first guy's wearing, that Curly Bill's wearing, look at the power for Hulking.
I just basically have a card that says, here, now, whoever now, takes it, you have this.
Yeah, now you do 2 extra points of damage to attack action totals, and your attacks may explode.
Maybe you give the kobolds some stuff that, you know, since they're minions and they have 1 hit point, as long as they make that connect, the kobolds aren't that big of a threat, but they could have some items that give them interesting abilities.
So if we have four players, I think we're going to have 4 non, what we would, I guess what we in old terms we would call like a non-minion. Each of the non-minions will have special abilities. I think we just have to assume that, or hope, or somehow mandate that each of the players, when they get the amulet or whatever it is, they give the ability to somebody else instead of trying to hoard it, you know, all their own, like themselves. We would try to do.
Yeah, to make myself the one superpowered player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking at the ghouls, I think the ghouls have rings of paralysis. Like, Imagine a ring with a little needle on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
The kobolds, they're probably just followers. I mean, they literally have no abilities.
I think we've just made this game a lot more fun for the players.
I think we have too. Mike, that was an excellent addition.
You're amazing, Mike.
No.
All right. Well, my only closing thought, Brian, is that I've had this movie thing that I've always wanted to do with Tombstone. I've always wanted to watch Kevin Costner's Wyatt Earp up until they arrive in Tombstone. And stop that movie and start Tombstone. And then stop Tombstone. And I forget the name of it right off, but there's a movie starring Bruce Willis where Bruce Willis plays Tom Mix.
Ooh.
And it's about his friendship with Wyatt Earp.
Wow.
I had no idea that existed.
It's a goofy early days Bruce Willis movie, but it exists and I have it on DVD somewhere.
Of course you do.
So we could do those 3 movies back to back.
Okay, wow. I would do it. Hey, and if we can do it on a nice night, like before it gets too cold, I can have the projector out and we can do it as like an outdoor movie event.
The entire life of Wyatt Earp in like 7 hours of cinema.
I was about to say that I have to start at like noon.
Well, I mean, in October it'll get dark around 6. I think we can do it.
Awesome. All right. That is RPG Lessons Learned for this week. Thank you for listening.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.